This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the non-stop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Lee Rubin, founder and CEO of Confetti.
The main attributor to our success is, A, besides the fact that we built a platform that had a very strong form of agility, the platform today can support various different use cases if we really wanted it to. But I think the main thing that contributes to the success that we have today is really on the fact that we pivoted super quickly. So the last invoice that we got from an in-person event and the first invoice that we got for a virtual event was 10 days. We spent no time sitting in sadness that our events business is in shambles. So I was like, all right, back to the drawing board. We're back to playing and having fun and trying to see, you know, what sticks, and the virtual events stuck.
This is Lee. She's a visionary culture leader with over a decade of experience in B2B sales. In 2014, she founded WeKudu, a remote corporate event planning agency. The idea behind it came from working at ZocDoc, where she struggled with the bureaucracy and logistics of planning team-building events. Soon after that, she founded Confetti, realizing that the problem could only be solved through a combination of technology and people, not just people. Under Lee's leadership, Confetti achieved exponential 600% growth during the COVID-19 pandemic, and she grew it as a leading solution for virtual team building through a dedicated focus on quality experiences. Their mission? To simplify event planning while empowering organizations to build stronger, happier, and more holistic teams through unforgettable shared experiences that make work life more memorable. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Lee to my podcast. We explore her journey to build a successful B2B SaaS company in a period where most of her competitors ceased to exist. Lee shares her story about a remarkable pivot during COVID and why she decided to do nothing when back to work kicked in again. She also shared how she wasted 3 valuable years at the start and what she could have done differently to avoid that. Last but not least, she elaborates on what ingredients she doubles down on to build a product people just keep talking about. By listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, what she has done differently to survive during and post-COVID, when other competitors closed their doors. Secondly, how she managed to pivot her entire business in less than 10 days when COVID started. Thirdly, what she learned from niching down, where everyone else was widening the net, and how that played out to their advantage. And lastly, how she's embedded delivering wow factor in every aspect of her company, and why this has become unnegotiable for her. Hi Lee, thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Ton.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I reached out to you because I saw a couple of things that I would qualify as remarkable. I think I got triggered by an email from Strictly VC about your funding. And then I started looking into your website, and just got a smile on my face. So I had to reach out because I like the energy that's coming from it. Talking about energy, before we dig into your company, Confetti, what drives you? What do you get energy from?
Ooh, what drives me? Where do I get energy from? I get energy from creating new things and solving new problems. I really believe that people are a reflection of the work that they put in. So if you're the kind of person that, you know, doesn't put their heart and soul into a job, then that's a reflection of who you are. So it's important that to really get that energy, you got to put your heart and soul into it.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that one. And I've seen a couple of plenty of examples of the good and the bad about that. So yeah, kind of bridging then the gap to your company, Confetti, which you started, according from my figures, in 2017.
Yeah.
What was the problem that you saw back then that was screaming for a solution like you've created here?
Yeah. So it started off when I was working at another startup, and it was a very fast-growing startup at the time, very well-funded. Maybe some listeners are familiar. It's called ZocDoc. And we were given very generous budgets towards team building. And it was very important to ZocDoc's culture at the time to create a best place to work in order to help with their recruiting efforts. And this was, you know, pre-COVID days, and we were very much, as I said, given those really generous budgets. There were all kinds of events that were happening throughout the organization from like a team level and from a company-wide level. And my team really struggled with putting together the team building events. And there were certain elements within ZocDoc that they started saying to us like, hey, we want you to stay away from just going to the bar and drinking alcohol. We want you to actually do something together as a team. It became very challenging for us to put those experiences together. Yeah. And I saw that the companies were continuing to invest in culture. But when people were tasked with it, it became really quite a mission. You had to, you know, come up with the ideation of which experience you want to actually do. You have to reach out to multiple vendors online to see, to get a quote and to see if they would be available to take it on. And then you got to go back and forth with negotiations of those vendors. There's a lot of bureaucracy and logistics that go into putting together an event. And I was like, wow, there must be a more simple way, but I didn't find a more simple way. So that really sparked the whole vision behind Confetti is how do we create a place where it's truly simple to put together an event? Because I find that people want to get people together, but it's hard. And if there's a way to kind of streamline that. And the vision really evolved over time. So if in the beginning it started only from like an efficiency perspective, and then it kind of transferred later into more of a quality perspective, which became something that was more important to me, because it's not just a matter of making the event easy to put together, but if you get partnered with the wrong vendor and you don't have a good time, then you really defeat the purpose of what that gathering is for. The quality became really top of mind, and quality is hard to crack, you know?
That's exactly why. No, that's right. And I can completely understand the efficiency part. But again, that's so many companies solve for efficiency where that's not the issue. It's an issue, but that's not what is really the important part about it. And I completely agree with you. The team events need to be events whereby at the end of the meeting, the team has a boost. The team has an energy. To go through like the next stages of hurdles they have to go through together.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what triggered on your website, the word unforgettable. I think that encapsulates it. I would call it remarkable, but I mean, fair enough.
Yeah. I think, you know, we chose the word unforgettable as an element of memories, because that's, when you've experienced something that's truly remarkable, you want it to be unforgettable, and you don't want to just, there's so many of our days that we just go through and live. And then we're like, oh, what did I eat yesterday? And what did I do this week? And what happened last month? And everything, like, time's just a blur. So trying to, you know, put those moments in people's lives where they're like, that was a special moment in my life. I remember that experience.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I mean, I've done way over 300 podcast interviews with people like you. A lot of the time when I ask, okay, what is the secret behind the company? It comes indeed back to the people and followed closely to the culture. This is something that you really help establish, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're asking if I help establish the culture within Confetti?
Yeah. Well, within Confetti, but also for your customers.
I mean, I can't. So here's something that I say with clients is, events are a part of culture. It should be a part of the playbook, but it can't solve all the problems. Like, if you have a very toxic culture, it's going to take a lot of work, and it's not going to just take a fun team building event to fix everything. There is a lot more important elements of culture, like communication and transparency and realizing that the people dynamics is extraordinarily complex, and building a business is more difficult than I think the average person can even comprehend. And that's tough. Like, you're put in a situation where the infrastructure, especially for a startup where innovation and building something that's never been done before, it's not the same as building even just a restaurant, which also has a very high failure rate. But there's hundreds of restaurants and there's hundreds of playbooks on how to build restaurants. Whereas within the startup world, you're really creating something that's never been done before. And there's a certain people that need to be okay with the roller coaster and the complexities that come with innovation. And again, people dynamics are hard. We try to separate work and life. And the reality is that if you had a really, really bad night of sleep, you're not going to produce great work the next day. And if you are having a really hard time at home or you're having a really hard time at work, like, you're going to dip one into the other. And so the culture is, it's very complex, but I do believe that what events allow us to do is kind of in the phrase of breaking bread together or sharing, you know, a laugh. And I think that the power of play is something that helps break the ice. And if you and I, for example, aren't getting along, like, being put on a team together, doing something that's outside of work, and now all of a sudden me getting to actually see a little bit more of just who you are as a person, your personality, having that shared laughter together makes me see you more as a human. And that humanizing helps with bridging that empathy that's needed to help fix that toxic culture.
Exactly. Yeah, well said. Because it's not a simple thing indeed. And toxic cultures are, they're created and can sometimes start with just hiring one wrong person. But that's a completely different story. Going back to when it started, it was indeed pre-COVID. And obviously it was an important topic back then. Has it become an even more important topic because of COVID?
I'm going to say yes. And it's interesting, I don't know if I have any stats on this, but like, I feel like people are talking about culture all the time. And no matter like where I'm going on, like some keynote speaker fireside chat unrelated to culture at all, culture comes up. And I think it started off with the whole back to work, you know, like everybody back to the office, back to work. There was a lot of fear around people working remotely and the trust that went towards people working remotely. And then there was essentially, some challenging times going into 2022, and people were like, oh, well, you know, we got to make sure everybody comes back to work, back into the office. And culture became something that was split because there were people who wanted to stay and work from home. There were people who really needed those people to come back to the office. There was all of a sudden new challenges of, okay, well, yeah, what do we do? And how do we continue to navigate this? So culture became a very big discussion point and point of debate.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially over the last few years.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, what is that also in relation then to, did you see a spike around the importance of team building?
Not, I don't think that there was a spike. I think team building has been something that has been really kind of on the forefront of companies' minds, at least for the past, 10 or so years, in different capacities. I wouldn't call it a spike in the increase in team building. Yeah, I do think that the workplace is becoming more humanized. And realizing that our employees are actually people that we need to look after. They're not just cogs in this machine. And so I do think that team building plays a role of that, but I wouldn't call it exponential. I think it's a very like a slow growing process for people to realize this is actually pretty instrumental. We should truly invest in this on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, the reason why I'm asking because of your LinkedIn profile is like, you were in an article from Financial Times in the list of the top 10 fastest growing companies in the US, where they've combined figures between 2019 and 2022, I think. So the reason why I'm asking, okay, did you see that spike? Because 2019, of course, is just...
Right.
Like
I think that's a factor of something else. So okay.
From zero to 8.5 million ARR is like pretty steep.
Yes. And I'm not disagreeing that there was exponential growth during the boom of COVID, but I think that is different because we were ready. Our platform was ready to essentially be able to take on new customers. And back then, there wasn't a company really that was doing virtual team building. That wasn't really a thing because before COVID, people did team building in the office, but there wasn't like really a huge presence of remote work and remote team building. But we very quickly shifted and pivoted Confetti from helping companies put together events inside the office to helping companies plan these virtual events. And we had the right solution at the right time. And we were able to sell quickly, like our offerings, but I don't think that, I think that the budget just shifted from, hey, we have in-office events and now we're shifting that budget to virtual events. I don't know if the budget itself is growing exponentially, if that makes sense.
That's a good thing. Exactly. That's the right thing. Yeah, exactly. So what was an early decision that appeared to be really important for the success that you see today? Was there anything, because I mean, this technology, it started in 2017. I mean, there wasn't really this whole thing around AI yet. And so you make a couple of fundamental choices, how the platform to get started. What appeared to be really important for where you are right now? Was there anything like that?
I think that the main attributor to our success is, A, besides the fact that we built a platform that had a very strong form of agility, the platform today can support various different use cases if we really wanted it to. And I think that the way that we built the platform is state of the art. But I think the main thing that contributes to the success that we have today is really on the fact that like we pivoted super quickly. So the last invoice that we got from an in-person event and the first invoice that we got for a virtual event was 10 days. We spent no time sitting in sadness that our events business is in shambles. You started the podcast talking about, what brings you energy. And I talked about like that creation process. And to me, I just got an opportunity to build a company from scratch, which I love that stage. So I was like, all right, back to the drawing board. We're back to playing and having fun and trying to see, what sticks and the virtual events stuck.
Let me make a small interruption here. Lee just made a critical remark about the safety net she has built into her business. Building an extremely versatile platform that can support various use cases. What it allows her to do is to try different go-to-market motions and see which one resonates best. That's valuable in iterating your way to repeatable traction, but equally important when you need to do a pivotal shift, like she did during COVID. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone, so they don't build a horizontal product to suit a wide market. No, they niche down, using the versatility of the platform, and with that, they're able to pinpoint the specific pain points that are super valuable and desirable to solve. And with that, they can surprise, i.e. wow their customers, and hit the right nerve. And that's noticed. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
We all know why. that is history. So yeah, I mean, I hear it a lot, that the agility of the, it's sort of a horizontal platform. You start a focus, and that's my next question at the end, on a particular part of the market. And if it doesn't resonate, you just try something else, but it doesn't change the product. It just is more the business model maybe, and who you're for, who you're not for. Is there a part of the market where you get more traction than other parts, and why is that? Is there a certain industry, for example, that find this problem of team building more important than others?
So I find it very interesting that, like, really, we get companies, we have over 8,000 unique paying companies. We support over 20,000 teams, about 1 million employees. It's a little over, it's inching towards 1.5. And it's always, I find really beautiful to see the wackiest companies participate in team building, you know, small construction companies, small electrical shop companies like that. That's what really kind of turns me on, I guess. But the tech companies and the well-financed companies are the ones who are pretty most consistently investing in team building. So that's who I would say is really kind of the leader. You need established companies that are secure with, you know, good budgets, and that they care about culture. And often that comes into the tech world because they're always trying to strive for great talent. They're striving to be the best place to work. They're looking for people who are, you know, excited about that innovative journey that lies ahead of them.
Exactly. Work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
Well, that's of course, talking about like where you spend your time and you go to markets. You try to kind of find the areas where everybody's like, yeah, sure, of course, where have you always been? Rather than, let me think about it for another month, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you say here. It's the tech companies, typically because of the problem that people leave so quickly and so easily, and they're well-funded at the end, also has to do, of course, with, is this really a problem that is both valuable and critical for them? Do they see it like that? Because you can also say it's more of a nice to have.
Yeah. I think culture is not a nice to have. I think culture is the spinal cord of an organization. I do think, though, that Confetti struggles with the fact that people and companies think that it's a nice to have. And, you know, it's easy to say, hey, you know, if the company isn't doing well, why don't we just cut back on team building budgets? But usually when the company isn't doing well, that's, a time to really gather the troops together and bring you positive energy to try to solve the problem ahead. You might have lower resources, but I don't find that resources is really that much of an excuse, because we have events starting at $7 per person. That's about treating your employee for a cup of coffee. We've got much, much, much bigger expenses on the balance sheet than these things. So I don't think that it's worth to cut out. And I often like to compare team building and going on dates with our significant others together. You know, like, you have these pivotal moments in your life with your partner. Do you give up on date night? Like, is that the right thing to do? Like, so you just don't go on dates for 6-12 months and you don't do anything nice for one another? You don't connect with one another? Like, that's not the right thing to do. But people see team building still as something different. You don't have to take your, you know, husband or wife to Paris, but you can take them to an ice cream shop and you can just spend an hour with them. And like, that could be day night. Like, it doesn't, the budget is not like the biggest element here. It's the action and the caring of seeing culture as a priority.
Well said. Yeah. That's always what I see as well. I mean, I do a lot of repositioning work, and typically when you find your ideal customers, it's not about the cost or about these type of things. It's always about what do they care about? What do they aspire? And the way that they act like that. Very well said. So the agility was the thing that was an early decision that was important, and I can understand why. Has there been any moment where you got stuck? And I'm not talking in this case about, okay, COVID hit, and of course that was a pivotal moment, but beyond that, in the scaling up, the fast growth, were there any hiccups that you saw?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there has been hiccups, and there still are hiccups. Again, building a business is harder than people can, I think, can wrap your head around. It's probably, I would say, it's one of those things like parenting where you just can't understand how hard it is until you're in it, or anything else. But yeah, I mean, you know, COVID obviously was a tailwind that was very positive for us to be on and allowed us to really kind of reach that exponential growth. But once there were discussions about going back into the office and us seeing that actually happen, you know, that exponential growth started to subside and, you know, become less. And now one of our biggest kind of elements is really figuring out, how do we retain the customers that have made remote work their strategy? And that's still something that we're trying to tackle.
What type of a challenge do you see then?
Well, I mean, I think that ultimately it's really getting those companies to commit towards figuring out what their culture is for a year, because our business model is a bit more transactional. So companies come on our site, they find an event that they want, they pay for it, and they're done. Just like if you want to go grab an Uber or Airbnb, these are all very transactional style businesses, but they're not recurring in nature. And in the VC world and just operationally, it is superior to have predictable revenue. Not knowing what tomorrow is going to look like financially makes it tough to run a business. So cracking how we can engage our customers and allow for more predictability in our revenue while also supporting what we think is right for them, which is how do we get culture to be a part of their month to month, their quarter to quarter, their year to year, and build a relationship where they come to us and we work together to make team building accessible to their employees. And also something that just doesn't happen. Make sure that that team building doesn't just happen once a year.
True. Yeah, exactly. Heard it a couple of times recently, funny enough, that this the same thing. It's a business model. And I understand the transactional nature of it, but how do you indeed kind of make it more of a habit inside a customer?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When we had the luxury of the exponential growth, we didn't need to worry about that yet at the time, because the amount of new customers that were coming in our door every single day was just, you know, incredible. But now it's a matter of like sustaining those companies and making sure that, as you said, like they are coming back.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I got some ideas around it. I'll fill you in on that later on. But looking on your website, I see your pricing model, or I see at least how you deal with that. Do you consider yourself more of a product-led growth company or more of a sales-led growth company?
We definitely considered ourselves more of a product-led growth company. We grew completely without a sales team up until this year. And essentially in Q4 of 2023, I think I'm getting mixed up with all the years because I feel like it's been a blur. We're in 2024 right now, right? Q4 of 2023, we brought on our VP of sales. And this year was the first year that we really transitioned and moved the company towards a sales-led growth. And now it's product-led sales. It's how do we get the product to help bring enough traction to get sales to have like a rich enough pipeline to spark those conversations, And with sales, we're really able to see that the nature of our relationships are able to grow from that one transactional event to $100,000+ contracts, and hopefully soon millions.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially, I think also in the transition that you just mentioned, I think this is an important one because it then requires more of a human to get people to see the bigger picture and what is possible.
Well, we still are very proud of the fact that the platform is self-serve. We just want to have an ability to communicate with those people that are booking with us and say, hey, like, Tom, if you booked this terrarium event, are you planning on booking other events throughout the year? And right now the product hasn't been good at having those conversations and sparking that second, third, fifth purchase. But we found that humans are really good at provoking that conversation and ultimately extracting that additional value that we need to succeed for this next step.
Absolutely. And that makes complete sense how you've done it so far, because it starts bottom up. It starts with one person that sees the vision of, hey, I want to do this unforgettable event, and let's get going. It's super easy to do. And then they get hooked. Second event, third event, fourth event. Yeah. And that's the moment
where
product that sales really is a viable model to jump into. Talking about differentiation then, that's a big topic that I always like. How do you go about it? In the beginning you said, of course, there was no other thing like this. I had a couple of people on my podcast that are in the event and, of course, later on the online event business, but it is a completely different thing. This is not about a conference. This is about a team.
Well, we had no shortage of competition going into 2021, 2022. And that's when our competition really started to kind of die down in 2022. A lot of our competitors got spooked by the return to office. And by the way, we did too, just to be 100% clear. I mean, we went back and forth throughout 2022 and 2023 on debates on whether we should rebuild our in-person side of the business. And we ended up sticking with virtual activities. And what we found with the companies that kind of diluted themselves with offering too much, where they offered offsites and they offered in-person events and they offered virtual events, is that they weren't able to crack the quality portion that people were so obsessed with, right? I mean, that we were obsessed with it. We're obsessed with it too. And we decided to stick with virtual. And so we really kind of carved our name as the leading solution for virtual team building, given the focus that we put in place. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to make the decision. It isn't easy to be in a market that is still, you know, getting pushed back on its viability. But I do believe that with the progression of technology, with changes with climate change, with geopolitical tensions, remote work is here to stay. And so we decided to place our bets there.
Glad you say that.
Other than that, there aren't too many competitors that have survived, quite frankly. Yeah. Like most of our competitors have shut down. And the ones that are there, they're either pretty large-scaled team building companies that aren't venture-backed, so they're usually not that infused with technology. So they're more manual, their margins are smaller. And then there's ones that haven't invested in actually a CTO, which is something I'm very bullish on. If you're going to build a tech company, you need to have a technological partner. And we have that, and it's allowed us to, you know, truly be tech first in the confines of our industry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a couple of things why I like what you say is, I mean, in my book, The Remarkable Effect, I'm talking about the 10 traits that define those companies we start talking about and keep talking about. And the first trait is about that these remarkable software companies acknowledge they cannot please everyone. And you made that choice there. Okay, we can do on-site events and off-sites and these type of things, but we don't. And because of that, you keep the focus, that's another trait, on the things where you have to make the difference, and you can actually keep that distance. I think that is that's the way to do it, because otherwise you start to dilute. And of course you can do all these things, but then where do you really stand out? What can you own there?
Absolutely.
So, seeing on your website how you kind of make that whole world unforgettable, stick out, and you can see it, you can actually feel it throughout the whole website. Everybody that listens to this, go and experience that yourself. What do you do specifically? Do you steer for anything in your company that everything that goes out has to have something of that unforgettability, remarkability, memorability?
Yeah. It's really that simple. We have had the luxury of producing tens of thousands of events. And when you're able to take the events that you've done and run them hundreds of times, thousands of times, you're going to be able to perfect that wow factor. And that's what we're committed to.
And the wow factor, how do you then establish that? Is that pure tech? Is it a combination of tech
and
people?
It's purely energy and a feeling. It's really making sure. When it comes to an event itself, it's content, it's the host, it's the technology. It all needs to play into the wow factor, yeah. And the host is really a very integral part in that. I'm sure that y'all experience what it's like to be in front of a really amazing host and how that changes things. You have, a DJ, for example, that's like an amazing, not just DJ from a music perspective, but from an energetic, entertaining perspective. And that can make all the difference. So it's content and it's the host, it's the whole package.
That also means then that is a lot of supplier qualification going on your end.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tons of supplier qualifications. Yeah, it's a whole department.
Have you got a framework for that? I mean, how do you say yes or no to someone joining the platform or not?
Yeah, there is a playbook, and there's just a lot of vetting. So it's making sure that the vetting is in place to qualify people for the experience. But there's a lot of role playing and practicing beforehand to making sure that we've got it right. And we don't always get it right, but when we don't get it right, we make sure that we compensate accordingly and learn from it and adjust.
Exactly. Last question then, running the company now since 2017 as the CEO, what are lessons that you've learned that you've loved to know, that you know now, but you loved to know before? What would be a do and a don't that you'd like to share with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission?
There's a lot of good ones, but I think I mentioned if you're a tech founder, then you should have a technical partner. That's a big one. That wasted 3 years of my life because I was trying to not have a partner in the journey, but realized that it was very critical. I think to come with a bit more of a humble and open mind. Like, I think a lot of founders, you have to find that weird balance between really believing in yourself and the product and the vision and the mission, but also being extremely adaptable to change. And figuring out that balance is a really tough one. So just be easy on yourself. Know that no advisor is perfect. If you have 5-10 advisors, they're all going to say different things. And that's where you're going to need to rely on your own intuition and take gambles on your own decision making. Those are some of the tips. Be a good person. Be data driven. Try to have fun on the journey.
Very important one, exactly. Yeah, that balance is a critical one. And like you say, it's people have different opinions. You have to kind of, play it by your own rules, your own gut almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about decision making itself, fast or slow down, take a distance. Some people say 24 hours. Have you got a model for that?
Oh, no. Still haven't cracked that one yet. I think some things are fast and some things are slow. I like maybe the model is like we say, like What's the importance and the risk factor of the decision? So we break things down to like easy, medium, and hard. And if it's easy, then you go fast. If it's medium, you go maybe a little slower. And if it's hard, you go slow to make sure that you're focused on the right things. But I do think anything that comes into strategy is important to slow down and make sure that the company's focused on the right things.
Exactly. Well said. Simple T-shirt type approach, which helps in a lot of cases. Well, thank you very much for sharing the journey, the story. Good luck on
Thanks, the next stage
of it. Where can people go to find out more about Confetti? Or to say hi to you?
You can find us at withconfetti.com, withconfetti.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn at Lee Rubin, LeeRubin. I'm always open to having a conversation with anyone in the beginning of their journey, late in their journey. I like connecting with people. So thanks so much for having me, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Well, likewise. It was a pleasure to have you on the call here. Thanks.
Bye.
And this ends my conversation with Lee. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Lee Rubin, founder and CEO of Confetti. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.